right, we're back. We're excited to break down the number 7 team on the Brick House NBA preview. Number 7 or 6th place in the West, Memphis Grizzlies. I'm your host, Bob Johnson.
And I'm Matt Baker, and I am excited.
Man, you know, I think I've said it before, but we broke down 30 NBA teams. I don't know why we even did the first 22, because it's really only the top 8 that have any chance of winning and that we're most excited to talk about.
Well, did we sign a contract stating we had to do all 30 teams?
Yeah, but we wrote that contract.
Oh, yeah. That's weird. Okay.
But, you know, being an NBA comedy podcast, the first 22 teams, there's a lot to poke fun at. And we'll still find shit to make fun of in the top 10, even on the best teams in the NBA.
Sure.
Let's just get right started then, because and tell you what the Grizzlies remind me of. The Grizzlies, they're tough, right? They remind me of Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis movies, Bruce Willis characters that he plays, right?
Yeah.
You know, it would be nice to be recognized for being like a great actor, maybe by an Oscar, or some sort of prize like that. But I don't think that's happening for Bruce Willis, and it hasn't happened so far for the Memphis Grizzlies either. But despite that, it seems like they're both happy to, in the meantime, just kick people's asses, get chicks, and eat barbecue, you know, like some manly shit. I think Zach Randolph, you know, could really embrace this sort of character. He's certainly embraced the city of Memphis. Tony Allen is like Bruce Willis' attitude personified. You know, his effort on defense is the equivalent of walking across broken glass with your bare feet, you know, to save your ex-wife and the hostages. Marc Gasol, even though he looks like he would probably be on the Russian side in Die Hard, you know, with that beard, let's say he's actually more like a Bruce Willis character as well.
A Russian Bruce Willis.
I think the Grizzlies want a championship, you know, probably more than Bruce Willis wants an Oscar.
Sure.
But there's a lot of powers working against them. It's, you know, we like NBA conspiracies. The Memphis Grizzlies, probably not going to get as much ratings as, you know, the Clippers, the Warriors, or even the Spurs.
Right.
And if there is any conspiracies in the league, then that could be one variable, you know, that keeps the Grizzlies from giving that acceptance speech for their role in The Sixth Sense or whatever it is. Let's just say yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah.
Move on to the next segment.
All right.
Previously on the Memphis Grizzlies.
Fun fact that I didn't realize while researching this team just now. It took the Grizzlies 16 years to win a playoff game.
Wow.
They didn't make
starting in Vancouver.
Right. So they didn't make the playoffs at all in Vancouver. And then their third year in Memphis, they finally made the playoffs. And they made the playoffs 3 straight years and got swept 3 straight years.
Right. Pau Gasol never won a playoff game, I think.
Right.
Until he came to the Lakers.
Yeah. But what I remember about those Grizzlies teams, even though they're getting swept, they were still kind of intimidating because they had Pau and they had Mike Miller and they had some... They had a little edge to them a bit because he had Hubie Brown, Mike Fratello. They played the Suns.
Like a last Boy Scout edge?
Sure. they played the Suns the first year of the Nash team in the first round. And I remember, I don't think I was nervous, but I just remember, oh, the Grizzlies could maybe muck it up a little bit. Yeah, they didn't. So it took them 16 seasons, and then they finally win a playoff series against the Spurs in 2011.
Right.
And they've been in the playoffs ever since, 5 straight years, and they do all right. Even they've gone out in the first round twice in those 5 years, but they've been 7 game series.
And they beat the Spurs in an 8 seed. The Grizzlies were an 8 seed. The Spurs, I believe, were defending champions with a number 1 seed.
The year before, the champs were the Lakers.
Oh, okay. But either way, an 8 seed beating a 1 seed
has
only happened 3 times, I think, maybe 4 times in NBA history. Like I said in the joking Bruce Willis comparison, they're right on the precipice of greatness.
Yeah.
So close each and every year and just haven't done it yet. Last year, they were in the toughest division in all of sports, the Southwest Division, where all 5 teams made the playoffs. And there's only 8 spots in the Western Conference.
There are so many humps in the West that you...
Yeah.
To get over them all.
Sixth place in the West would be good for second place in the East,
yep.
according to our, our predictions and our rankings. Let's talk about the owner. The owner's pretty cool. He's only a couple years older than us, Matt.
Makes me feel great.
His name is Robert J. Pera. And when I was looking him up, the first thing I told Matt this morning was, the dude, he can dunk.
Yeah.
You know, I bet Mikhail Prokhorov can dunk, but he's 6'8". This guy's 6'3".
Prokhorov doesn't have time for dunking. He's too busy, like, water skiing with dolphins and dolphins attached to his feet and, oh, yeah, all that weird stuff.
Yeah, at the age of 36, Pera was on Forbes' list for the 10 youngest billionaires in the world. Let me tell you briefly how he made his dough. It's not an equity fund.
I totally expected for it to be that.
Yeah, so he's a Silicon Valley guy. He's actually born in the Silicon Valley area. He always admired Steve Jobs, and so coming out of college, he got a job at Apple, and his department, or what he was put in charge of, is working on the Wi-Fi devices to make sure they complied with the Federal Communications Commission, okay? And so while he's working at Apple, he discovers that they don't even get near the limit of the power sources that they could use to throw signals. They're far below the limit that the FCC has. So he was suggesting, you know, they boost their power to make the Wi-Fi signal have a much further range, right?
So you basically max out the legal amount of what we can do.
Yeah, of power for the transmission signal.
Right.
I guess this was kind of fell on deaf ears at Apple. They weren't giving him much, so he went and spent his nights and weekends working on a prototype.
Well, he was only 27 at the time, so right. You could imagine that Jobs and all those other guys probably... If a 27-year-old kid comes up to tell Steve Jobs something, he's going to be like, yeah,
yeah,
you're cute.
Yeah. Anyways, so what he did was he left Apple after just a couple of years and founded a company called Ubiquiti,
mm-hmm.
Ubiquiti Networks. In 2011, he took the company public. The IPO made him a billionaire, but he only started with $30,000 investment of his personal savings and credit card debt. And anyways, he made Wi-Fi technology that could deliver Wi-Fi on a 36-mile radius. In June 2015, just this past summer, Ubiquiti broke the record for Wi-Fi distance, sending a broadband signal 140 miles from L.A. to Vegas. I don't really even understand how this works.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Wi-Fi signal, you know, is shoddy in the garage. Maybe we need to buy one of Robert Pera's transmitters.
Yeah, you're definitely saying all this, and I hear the words you're saying. They don't make sense to me, but I understand the words.
But yeah, let's get back to the basketball. In 2011, he bought the Memphis Grizzlies. Well, actually, he is a 25% owner of the Memphis Grizzlies. It's a big group of people.
Timberlake's one, right?
That bought the team. Justin Timberlake.
He's
owns
got the
2.84%.
Whoa, that's more percent than I thought. I was going to give him. I was going to say he owns the celebrity less than 1%.
It's exactly twice as much as Anfernee Hardaway owns, who owns 1.42%.
Anfernee Hardaway is a Memphis legend.
Yeah.
They love that guy there.
Yeah, Robert Pera. So he, for $45 million, had a 25% stake. This is all interesting. And those are the only celebrities that I know, anyways, of the, it looks like 20 different groups or people
solid
that are involved in this. But here's an interesting thing I found in researching this. So they paid, what was reported was that the Grizzlies sold for $377 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
I found this list of all of the investors. And the article acknowledged that, okay, so we just broke down what everyone invested, and it doesn't add up to the reported $377 million. Why, you ask? This is why, is because the published price of a franchise, when it is sold, includes assumed debt and other obligations. So what these guys actually forked over for the $377 million was only $209 million, because they assumed $168.4 million worth of debt that the Grizzlies had.
Huh.
So this is interesting. You know, you wonder, even billionaires, to come up with so much cash, I always found, like, how do they do this? You know, like, people's net worth are often so tied to stock holdings, you know, assets,
right,
equity, investments that they've made. You know, most people, when they say they have $1 billion, that's not what they have in their bank account. Let's get on with it. Oh, yeah, one last thing about Robert Pera last year. He had a good PR move. He challenged Tony Allen on social media to a game of one-on-one.
Amazing.
And said, you know, that for every point Allen scored, he would donate to his charity of choice.
That's fun.
Yeah. I think Tony Allen has just, like, said that. He's like, that's found money, boss. But let's talk about who plays for the team.
And now, the starting lineup for your Memphis Grizzlies!
Point guard. And I think he's, over the past few years, Mike Conley has really become one of the better point guards in the league.
I think you could argue that he is one of the best veterans, if not the best NBA veteran, who has not been voted to an all-star team.
Yeah, he came out, I think, initially, because he was on the same team as Greg Oden at Ohio State. In fact,
same high school.
High school,
team.
Too. They didn't lose a home game. I don't think the two of them lost a home game together ever.
In high school?
And in college. The one year at Ohio State, they didn't lose a home game.
It's only in the tournament?
And I think the downfall of Greg Oden is that he wasn't able to play in the NBA with Mike Conley. That's just a random aside. I don't think that makes any sense.
They should have forced their way onto the same team.
They should have.
Marcus Morris brothers.
Hey, Mike Conley's dad was both their agents. So I think
he was their high school coach, too.
Yeah, and he was an Olympian. So, but Conley, I think, benefited playing with Oden to the point where it took him a few years post-Oden to really become himself. He started out kind of slow in the NBA, and now, which makes sense, he came out after his freshman year. So you got to at least give the kid a three-year, okay, this is when I finally would have graduated from college and can start my NBA career buffer.
Especially with point guards, I think.
Yeah. So now he's 26, 27. This is about the time that you would think he would flourish. It even happened with Steve Nash. Like, Nash, granted, came out after his senior year at Santa Clara, but it took him a few years to finally become Steve Nash.
Yeah.
You got to learn the system.
You got to catch up to the speed that everybody else is playing.
Right.
No matter how good you were in high school or college.
The real strength of the team is down low with Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol. Zach Randolph, I love Zach Randolph. He's one of my favorite. Yeah. He's one of my favorite non-Suns players in the league.
Yeah.
Half-inch
vertical. Yet one of the toughest rebounders and low post scorers in the league.
I was listening to the Dan Patrick show, and they had him interviewed. They were interviewing him, and Dan Patrick said, "Will you dunk for me tomorrow?" The reason he said that is because Zach Randolph never dunks.
Yeah.
It's insane. He had one. He got close and laid it in. Because I listened the next day too, and it's weird. He just doesn't dunk.
Maybe he can't.
Yeah, it's crazy, but Zach Randolph, to me, is the model of a double-double guy.
What he's not the model of is what power forwards have become in today's league, which is what makes the Grizzlies so fascinating.
Like a stretch four, you mean?
Yeah.
He doesn't shoot outside. He averaged 0.3 three-point attempts a game last year.
Yeah, and he's got a decent 15-foot jump shot, mm-hmm. but I just mean Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph are running like a 90s high-low game.
And they don't get in the way of each other.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, most teams are spreading the floor, you know, so you have four guys around the perimeter. These guys have a cool offense where they're not, you know, just copying the other 25 teams in the NBA who are all doing the same thing. They got their own style, which makes them, you know, a dark horse contender.
Yeah, that's why teams are slightly scared of them, is because the reason some people thought the Grizzlies could take out the Warriors is because of that reason. Now, the Warriors proved to be a much more physical team for people who hadn't watched them all year. The Warriors were really physical. They were the best run and gun / physical team that there has been probably in the past decade, the combo of both.
They were a good team.
Yeah. So that's why they were able to take out the Grizzlies, because they could match the Grizzlies down low.
What they didn't have for a while was much shooting at all. And Mike Conley's really improved as a three-point shooter.
Yeah.
And I think Courtney Lee is a solid starting shooting guard. You know, right. It's a position that's not super deep in the NBA, but Courtney Lee has got a reliable stroke at this point.
Well, they were also helped with getting Jeff Green from Boston. Conley, Lee, Green, Randolph, and Gasol, just saying that starting five, I'll be honest, doesn't strike fear in my heart. Just
well, that's
because
it's the same starting five that they've had for a while now.
Well, Green came on last year, but I know what you
Green's
mean.
Green's new, but
right,
yeah.
But you're talking about in general. They fit into what the Grizzlies are trying to do.
Still, I have them on the outside looking in with sixth in the West. I think these guys can win. You know, we had Bjorn on, and he said at some point in the season every year, when the odds are right, he'll put a bet on the Grizzlies to win the championship. Because if these guys all just have a stellar run,
yeah.
If they're all playing to their full potential, Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph, I think they're mostly underrated guys.
Yeah.
But if they're playing as well as they can play, you know, I'd put them up against the best position and, you know, the best players at their position in the league. Marc Gasol was first team all NBA.
You may not want him at 10-1, but you'll take him at 25-1 or 20-1.
Yeah, I think Bjorn got him for like 50-1 last year.
Yeah. Because at some point they just are the forgotten about team.
Well, let's get into how many games we think they're gonna win then.
Record prediction.
If they stay healthy this year, last year they were 55-27. You know, the year that Lionel Hollins got fired, I believe they won 56 games, which was their franchise record.
Absolutely.
I've got them right at 56 this year, tied with our prediction for the Chicago Bulls. And as I said, just giving them the slight edge, because I think if the Bulls and the Grizzlies were in the finals and I had to bet on it, I would bet on the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I'm going to go 53, not because I think they're any less talented than last year. I just think that with a lot of moving parts in the Western Conference, you could end up with less wins just because.
Yeah, they're playing the Spurs, the yeah. Rockets, the Mavericks, and the Pelicans four times each.
So it's just because of how things fall, not because of any less talent.
Cool, yeah. Okay, you got them at 53, I got them at 56. We will follow this as we go. Let's talk about the Kings.
What the fuck has anything got to do with LeBron James?
So, LBJ was in the news that he is not re-signing his contract with McDonald's.
Oh, yeah? I didn't see this.
Okay. Well, yeah, you know, he's... He's criticized a little bit on the internet for, like most professional athletes, endorsing some food and some drinks that are pretty terrible for people.
Yeah,
you know? And
they taste great.
He's really influential over kids, but he, you know, he's been a spokesperson for Sprite, McDonald's, and Powerade, Gatorade, one of the two, you know, glorified sugar waters. But he's not resigning with McDonald's. I don't think it was a moral decision as much as he is making these Jay-Z businessman type deals. So he is signing with Blaze Pizza.
Ah.
Doing an equity deal.
So he's switching. He's not getting out of the food market. He's just switching.
Yeah, he's doing like he did with Bose headphones and getting an equity stake in the company. He actually bought a couple of franchises of Blaze Pizza, which is, if people don't know, I didn't know, it's a make-your-own pizza pie
place. It's Chipotle
place.
For pizza,
yeah,
essentially. And I like those places.
They
I
were
really
comparing
do.
Them to a few other places, most of which I hadn't heard of except for Pizza Rev.
Mm-hmm.
I went there with you and Kevin one time. But anyways, I guess this business model has been growing 400 to 450% just over the past year. They plan on opening a new restaurant every 4 days this coming year. And LeBron James, he's investing now, 10% now. You know, just a few years from now, I bet we're going to hear he's selling out for another, you know, crazy eight-figure deal for his percentage.
The problem some of those places run into is they over-franchise to the point where it just... If you grow too quickly, you might not be able to keep up with the growth.
Sure, but just being an owner of the stock because LeBron has such pull, you know, so many Twitter followers, such an influential spokesperson. Between him getting the stock and them announcing the stock, as soon as that's announced, LeBron is your new equity partner.
Right.
I'm sure the value of that stock went up probably 100%.
Absolutely.
Just on that. But enough about the king. Let's talk about Matt.
The actual king.
And now it's time for a personal anecdote with Matt Baker.
King of the pod. Matt, with the Grizzlies, I think they're maybe at this point properly rated, but for many years an overlooked, underrated team.
Yeah.
An underrated person, place, movie, book, athlete, actor, musician. Someone that you got your moment here to tell people why they should notice this.
I have two for you. I have an underrated...
That was a really complicated way of saying a simple question.
Yes, it was. It's all right. We here at Brick House like to say a lot of words.
Paid by the second.
I got two... Yeah. I have two things. I have a book and I have an actor.
Okay, cool.
So
most underrated mustache style.
Yes, yes. not the handlebar. Very overrated, Bob. So first one, I'll give you the book. It's C.S. Lewis, The Problem of Pain, a book I read fairly recently.
Who's C.S. Lewis? What's his
name? C.S. Lewis is Chronicles of Narnia.
Okay.
So I think, I don't know if a lot of people might not know, he's known for that, but he's also worked his way to becoming one of the more influential Christians of the 1900s.
Oh, okay.
He was a Christian thinker. Like he wrote books on Christianity and his thoughts on Christianity. He wrote Mere Christianity is one of the books he wrote.
Uh-huh.
So Problem of Pain, I really enjoy because it's all his thoughts and he's very smart. So it's not like just a random dude just sat down and collected his thoughts on a subject, but it's all his thoughts on the question of why is there pain in the world?
Uh-huh.
That's how it, interesting. It's not a long book, but it...
An underrated one, though.
Yeah, underrated just because I think he's more known for Aslan and Chronicles of Narnia and all that stuff. So underrated as far as this guy had a whole second set of books.
Yeah.
Which is...
No magical wardrobe in this
problem.
One.
Yeah, yeah. Allow me to step into the magical wardrobe of pain. So that, I think, underrated book. Underrated actor, Paul Dano.
Yeah.
He...
From Little Miss Sunshine
he
and
has
There
worked,
Will Be Blood.
He has worked with everybody.
Yeah.
If you look at his IMDb, he's been movies with De Niro, Daniel Day-Lewis. He was in 12 Years a Slave. He was in Looper. He's been...
So he's not underrated by the casting directors.
No, but if you look at what he's been in, he's been good enough to be in movies with all the top actors.
Yeah.
And he is good.
What do you
too.
Like about him?
I like that he's good. He holds his own and you can tell he's a guy who knows what he is and knows where he is in his career. And he never tries. I've never asked him this obviously, but you know that if
you haven't seen him at work,
actually I have met him.
Oh, really?
A few times. He's actually super nice.
Cool.
He's really nice. And he actually remembered me the second time, even though I hadn't seen him in a few years.
He's probably about our age.
He is, yeah. It doesn't seem like the type of guy that's like, okay, I'm getting in this movie with Hugh Jackman or with De Niro. This is my moment. I'm going to take these guys out.
It's like he's a role player.
Yeah, but but that's the best way. If you're good at being a role player enough in these movies, soon you get your own movies.
Yeah.
And he's only...
Or you get some like championships with the Spurs.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and you get that
Danny Green money.
You get that Corey Joseph money. Yeah. So if he's only 31, so if he plays that role long enough in his mid to late 30s, soon he'll just get thrown a bunch of money to do dumb movies like everyone does. This comes sort of off of meeting him recently, but then it stirred conversations with Casey and I about, oh, this dude has actually been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah. I loved his character in Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah.
Like reads Nietzsche and just he's taking a vow of silence and just wants to join the Air Force.
Yeah. It's a great, and
he
then
doesn't even say a word for 90% of the movie
until he realizes. And it's a great, a great way to get him to start talking. It's devastating.
Yeah.
You really feel for his character at that moment. And then he just becomes hilarious.
Well, cool. That was a good answer.
Were those all right?
I like it.
on the next episode of Brick House.
Next team. Oh, shoot, man. We're in the top six on the next team. And this one, without a doubt, I would say they have two of the top five players in the league, which is, you know, the best combination of players. They've got a new coach. They've got a couple of weird, controversial owners. And they've got a superstar that's going to be under the microscope all season. He's going to have a lot of people courting him, as it were.
Oh, man.
We're going to be talking about a possible decision 2.0 next time on Brick House. We'll be right back.